ministry of the Bible Church of Brownsburg. The teacher for this morning's message is Fred Klein.
Continue our study of faith examples that are included in chapter 11 and the principles of faith that the author included to this letter to the people in this church who were of Hebrew descent, who had been former Jews but now were following Christ. We're specifically going to look at the faith examples starting in verse 23 that start with the time of the Exodus. In fact, it starts with the time of the birth of the person who led the Exodus, which was Moses, from Egypt until the first battle when the Hebrew people were in the process of forming a nation as they started to possess their land. Now, a group of people is not a nation until they have a land. And so part of the promise to Abraham was that there would be a nation. And up to this point, they were just a giant family when they were still in Egypt. But when they started to possess the land, that's when they had a land associated with this people, and they became a nation. So this period of time, starting with the birth of Moses all the way through Joshua leading the first battle in Jericho, is the kind of the time frame that we're looking at in today's lesson. And so I've labeled that the faith in the Exodus, or faith by the people in the Exodus. It was no wonder here that the author includes a significant section on Moses. Moses, as we've learned earlier in Hebrews, was a Hebrew. He was a hero of the Hebrew people. He was their greatest prophet. It's no wonder that the author included examples from his life. Back in chapter 3 of Hebrews, it said, verses 2 through 5, it says, he was faithful, that's Moses, to him who appointed him as, or Jesus was faithful as to him who appointed him, as Moses also was in all his house. For he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, by just so much more that the builder of the house has more honor than the house. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now Moses was faithful in all his house as a servant for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken later. There back in Hebrews chapter 3, Moses was introduced, and the point was that Jesus, the Messiah, is greater than Moses. In fact, Moses himself, in his words in Deuteronomy, pointed to the prophet that's coming that's greater than I, and that is referring to Jesus. So Moses even looked toward the Redeemer coming. So one thing that we're going to see in these faith examples in the Exodus period of time is a pattern that has to do with decisions we make during our life. And so people who have, of faith also walk by faith, and walking by faith includes the decisions we make. And we make lots of decisions every day. Like you all this morning had to decide what color socks to put on, or if you were going to even wear socks. It is cold enough that you probably all did. And it's also Indiana. Now, if we were in California, I assume that some people might not. But those are the kind of decisions that we make that go from the very mundane. You know, am I going to button my shirt from the top down or from the bottom up? You know, well, you probably have it where you don't even think about it because it's just something you decided a long time ago, and that's how you do it. But we also have big decisions like where am I going to work, or who am I going to marry, where am I going to live, or how much money am I going to retain, how much money am I going to give, how much time am I going to spend helping the local church, and those kind of things. And so those are all other decisions that we have that are a little bit bigger. But all of us should be doing all those decisions by faith. And it's because, this causes us to wonder, well, what decisions are faith-based, and how does faith enter into the routine decisions we all have to make? And hopefully after today's lesson, you'll be better equipped to answer that. It's because faith is based on revelation. The revelation we have is the Bible. In the absence of revelation, there's freedom. In the presence of revelation, decisions must be molded or constrained by revelation. In other words, when the Bible's vocal about something, we need to take heed. if there's an area where the Bible is silent, then we have freedom. And of course, there are decisions where the Bible provides basic guidelines but not specific instructions. There we have freedom within the guidelines established. And so, with that, let's open our Bibles to Hebrews 11. I'm going to read the whole thing, and then we'll go back and work through it a piece at a time. And this week, instead of doing an exercise, I'm just going to teach it. But I left blanks in your table, and so you'll have to listen and figure out how to fill in the blanks. And if I miss a blank, you'll have to say, hey, wait a minute, Fred, what about this one? I didn't get that one, and I will be happy to do that because I very possibly could skip one. So let's start with verse 23, and we'll be reading all the way down through verse 31. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for which he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroys the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through the dry land. And the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient, after she had welcomed the spies in peace. And so with that, we will get started. And let's start with the very first by faith, and it's by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. Now, it's amazing that an infant could have that kind of faith to cause his parents to hide him. No, this is talking about really the faith of the parents. And the parents' name, we know from later on in the Exodus, the parents' names are listed as Amram and Jochebed. And so those were Moses' parents. Back in the original story, it just really focuses on Moses' mother. But here it talks about Moses' parents. And in fact, when Stephen was giving his message in Acts chapter 7, he talked about his father. And so it was both parents that were hiding this child. And so when we look at the faith action, it was that they hid Moses and they were depending on a miraculous preservation and preparation of his anointed. And so I'll get into his anointed part in a second. The apparent consequence was that, well, they would, if they were caught, they would suffer the king's wrath, whatever that wrath might be, some kind of punishment. I suppose up to death, I presume, definitely death of the child, because what the king's edict was to throw these babies into the Nile and drown them, these male children, because the nation was getting too big and strong. And so Pharaoh had this great plan of making sure all the parents killed the male children. Now, we know that through Satan, as he's behind the scenes in everything, this is very similar to Herod when he had all the male children killed because of the Lord Jesus Christ's birth. This is foreshadowing that time. But every Jewish mother would wonder if my child is the Messiah or is going to be of the line of the Messiah. And so no one knew for sure, but they all probably wondered that. But anyway, the near-term hope they had, I'm going to show here in a second through the revelation they had. So let's just talk a little bit about revelation. So let me ask you the question, what revelation would Jochebed and Amram had at that point in time? So anything that had been said to anybody up to that point that God had told them, they would have that revelation. So what revelation did we talk a little bit about last week that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had? The promise. Yeah, and so they would have known about the promise, that there was a promise of a nation, of a land, of a redeemer, and of blessing. And so those were the items that we talked about in the promise. Now, there was more detail about that there was going to be kings in the nation that came from him and so forth, but those were the basic things were promised: a land, a redeemer, a blessing, and a nation. So that's one part of Revelation. What other revelation did they have? That perhaps they did. You know, that some people think that there were some. Yeah. There were some, maybe some things documented before the flood. But in specific terms of revelation, that had to do with something that they knew what was going to happen in the future. Was there any other revelation? And there was. The Exodus from Egypt was already revealed. I want to draw your attention to back, and you don't have to turn there. I'll just read it for you. Genesis chapter 15, to Abram, back even before Abram was called Abraham, in verses 13 through 16, here's what God said to Abraham, or Abram. He said, quote, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go with to your fathers in peace, and you will be buried at a good old age. Then in the fourth generation they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete." And so this is a promise that was given to Abraham by God that foretold that there was going to be the Egyptian captivity, enslavement, and the Exodus. And so the Amram and Jochebed, as they were having this baby Moses, would have known that revelation. There was a promised Exodus. In fact, they knew that it was going to be about 400 years. And if they were good at keeping the calendar, they might have said, hey, you know, it's about 400 years since we went into captivity. And they would have known it could be early at any time that a person is raised up to, that God will bring this nation out of captivity. Genesis chapter 50, verse 24, in the end of Joseph's life, Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." And here, again, Joseph foretells the Exodus. So they had a revelation available about not only the promise that was given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but also there was a promise that there would be captivity, enslavement, and then the Exodus. Now, I think there was one other bit of revelation here, and this is not written down in the Bible, and you have to get there by process of deduction. So I want to always be clear when I'm going to tell you something that is not absolutely clearly written down in God's Word. And so I'm going to try to share with you how I got to this point, but I'm not going to go and be hard and fast on this because I don't really need to. But I believe the Bible teaches that Jochebed and Amram, it infers that they had revelation from God that Moses was the one who's going to lead his people from Egypt. And so let me describe that for you. And so that goes back, the first hint we have is back in Acts chapter 20, or Acts chapter 7, verse 20. And this is where Stephen was giving his account. And it says, Stephen said, "It was at this time that Moses was born, and he was lovely." It doesn't say in the sight of his parents. It says in the sight of God. And he was nurtured 3 months at his father's home. And so here you have a hint that God had his eye on Moses as the one who would be the deliverer even at his birth. But this, I think this went beyond that he was lovely or a beautiful child, here the author's calling it an act of faith that they hid this child. So how could that be? So faith, biblical faith is based on revelation. They must have had a revelation concerning Moses as the one God chose for leading his people out of Egyptian slavery. Now, I'm going to do one other verse in Acts chapter 7 here when we hit the next one, so I'm going to save that. That further, I think, helps understand at least how I get to the idea that Moses was anointed to lead the children of Israel in the Exodus And that was shared with his parents, very likely. Now, let's just say that that wasn't the case. Let's just say that Moses' parents did not have actual revelation that said Moses was going to be the one who would lead the children of Israel on this exodus. What they did have, though, was the promise, and they had the Exodus, and they knew about when the Exodus would occur. And so every little boy that was being born in that time, every mother might have thought, I wonder if my child is going to be the one who leads this nation, because I know God is going to do it. I know when he's going to do it, and this may be the kid. And because this may be the kid, I'm going to preserve him because he may be the one. And that would still be in faith, wouldn't it? All right, just let me give you an illustration. I know this, all of you probably don't have the same view of eschatology I do. I'm a pre-millennial, pre-trib rapture person. And so I therefore believe that the Lord could come and rapture us at any point in time. I could believe that I know there will be a rapture. Okay, by faith I know there will be a rapture. But I can't say by faith I know I'm going to be raptured. I don't know that because the Lord may not come in my lifetime. You know, I may get killed in a car wreck on my way home from church today, and I don't get to be in the rapture. But if I'm alive, when the Lord does come, I will be included. And so by faith, I know there will be one. I know that if I'm alive when he comes, I will be raptured. But I can't say by faith I am definitely going to be raptured. Okay, and that would be like this, you know, it's about the right time. Moses' parents may have said, hey, we know that there is someone who's going to be the one that leads this nation or this group of people out of this slavery, and it may be this little boy. And they knew about the Redeemer, so forth, that was coming in the promise. So, but I think it goes farther than that personally. I think they actually really understood, and I think they were given revelation. I think the parents were given revelation that this little boy was the one who was going to lead, in spite of how unlikely it seemed as a slave, that that somehow he could be kept alive and prepared to actually lead the people away from slavery. I that's where I come to, but I can't prove that. It doesn't say that in the Bible, and I want to be clear about that. Now, so we've done the revelation. So what choice were we talking about that the parents had? Well, they could either obey God and try to maintain, keep the baby alive and not kill because the Redeemer was coming through the seed, or they could obey the king of Egypt. And so that was their choice, and they chose to obey God instead of the king of Egypt, knowing that there could be a consequence of suffering the king's wrath. And so they hid Moses and depended on a miraculous preservation and a preparation of his anointed. And so somehow this little baby had to not only be preserved, but had to be then prepared for his, you know, as I think, that prepared for the task that he had. He was the one who was anointed to be the deliverer of these people from Egypt. So what would the near-term hope be that they were relying on? It was that there was going to be a deliverance of people of Israel from Egypt. And what would be the long-term hope? Well, it's the promised land, the promised Redeemer, the promised nation, the promised blessing. And so with that, you have to say then, okay, well, what can we learn then? What would be the faith principle? And there are probably several, but one that I came up with is that faith believes in God's plan and his power to overcome what seems impossible. And so you have a baby being born into slavery, that he's completely destitute of any money. He doesn't have any, nothing special about him. How in the world is God going to even preserve this baby's life and then prepare him to be the one who leads the people out of the slavery? And that had to seem absolutely impossible. But they knew and they believed that God was going to do that and lead the people out of slavery. Now, let's move on then. We go to the next section. If I can flip my paper, there we go. That goes on to now Moses in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 through 26. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for which he was looking to the reward. Now, each one of these by faith actions are going in a chronological order. And in the chronology of this, if we said when he left Egypt, you can't jump all the way to the end when they were doing the Exodus after the last plague. I don't think that's what this is talking about. I think this was talking about after he killed the Egyptian, and then he fled to Midian. And he was 40 years old when that happened. Now, if we were in Exodus studying this passage, we'd be talking about how that Moses acted in the flesh when he killed the Egyptian. And that would be true. Because it wasn't God's time yet. But what Moses did, though, when he fled, though, was an act of faith that the author of Hebrews is stating. You can't get that from Exodus by reading that account. But the author here is saying to us, and it's inspired by the Holy Spirit, that his fleeing to Midian was an act of faith. And that makes sense to me, and I'll try to explain. So what was the revelation? Well, it's the same revelation as we were talking about before. There was the promise, the Exodus, and then Moses' anointing to lead the Exodus. And with that, I said that I was going to read one other verse in Acts chapter 7, and this is from the sermon that Stephen gave. And it said, he, which is Moses, supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. And so at age 40, when he killed the Egyptian, Moses thought that they would understand that he was the anointed to be the deliverer. And so how did Moses ever think that? Did he just dream it up on his own? I think he was taught that by his mother, because his mother was his nurse. When he was up until he was past the age of being nursed, and I believe that he then was told that we were told that you are the deliverer, and so that's the other verse that I think gets me to the place where I think that his parents were given revelation that now it does it matter that no. Because his parents could already knew that there was going to be an Exodus. It was going to be about 400 years. And they could have said, you know, Moses, it might be you. You're in a position where, you know, we think that someone is going to be the deliverer. Maybe it's you. And so that's possible. And it wouldn't take away from faith. Because Moses, as he grew up, could have said, hey, I might be the one. And when he did this, thought that people would say, hey, he's in a position where he has this power and this education and everything to be the deliverer. And it doesn't matter because he did it, but it was by faith. But I think there must have been specific revelation. But I can't be hard and fast on that. You can't find that exactly said plainly in the scripture. Now, what was the apparent consequence? Well, to suffer the reproach of Christ, or live in the luxury of, which would be for Moses the sin of disobedience. And here's the other reason why I think that this was divine revelation. So, is living in luxury a sin? No, it absolutely is not a sin. But living in luxury, when you know that you're anointed to be the deliverer of this people, where you ignore that anointment and go on and just live for the world, that absolutely would be sin. And so that is the other, I think, little thing, hint that infers that Moses believed he was to be the anointed deliverer of this people from slavery. And if he hadn't lived up to his calling, that he would be living in sin. Okay, does that make sense? Now, I'm going to come back to the reproach of Christ here for a second, because it's interesting. You say, well, where was Christ mentioned back in the topic of Exodus? And so I'll come back to that in a second here. But let's look at what would be the long-term hope then that Moses would have. He says, or at the end of this verse, he said, for he was looking to the reward. What does that have to do with? What would be Moses' long-term hope? What would be the reward? What would it have to do with in terms of what was revealed? Yeah, the Redeemer would be part of it. It would be all the elements of the promise, right? Yeah. He was looking forward to that promise, that city whose builder and architect is God, whose foundations were laid by God, that place that's unshakable and righteous. the land that was promised and a blessing. You know, so that's the promise, that the long-term hope that Moses had. Just as all these people of faith, in every single faith example, that was their long-term hope. What was the near-term hope, though? Well, they knew that there was to be an Exodus, and so they were looking forward to the deliverance of Israel from Egypt. And so the faith action here then was he fled to Midian after he killed the Egyptian. So he had killed an Egyptian who was beating a Hebrew man. Then when he realized that they didn't think he was the Redeemer, and didn't occur to them that it wasn't working right then, and God wasn't in it, and he fled to Midian. And so his choice here was to fulfill God's anointed task of delivering his people, or live in his Egyptian ruler. That was one choice. But the other choice here, as he fled, was to after he had already decided. So he had considered carefully before he ever killed the Egyptian. He believed he was a Redeemer, and he knew, or not the Redeemer, but the deliverer from slavery. And he killed the Egyptian in the power of the flesh. Now, is this the first time in the Bible this something like this has happened, where a person had a promise and they tried to do it themselves? Yeah, Abraham, absolutely. So Abraham was the man of faith, and he knew that there was going, his child, that was who the nation was going to come through, and so he and Sarah came up with a scheme to try to have the promise fulfilled through Hagar, the do-it-yourself plan. And so this is Moses' do-it-yourself plan, where he killed the Egyptian. He did that on his own, and God wasn't in it. When he realized that, he could either stay and probably get killed, or just going to be completely unable to do anything to rescue the people, or he could retreat. And so sometimes retreat is the better part of valor, right? It is not saying, oh, I'm going to stay here and fight in the flesh. It says, oh, God's not in this. I need to go wait on God. And I believe that's what his act of faith was, is I know I really believe I'm supposed to be the delivering person, the anointed one. I can't stay here and face this right now, or that's going to mess up God's plan, because I've acted in the flesh. I've got to go be patient. And so that, I think, gives us a lesson here that is so hard for us, and it's very applicable to our day. There are times where we know what we're supposed to do, or we have revelation that helps us understand what we're supposed to do. But when we try to do it in the power of our own flesh, it flops. But when we do it in the power of God, in his timing, it succeeds. And so what's the difference? Well, it's if God's in it or not. And so in Psalms it says, unless the Lord builds a house, the laborers labor in vain. And here, this is that bears that principle out. Any path that we take outside of walking by faith is sin, and that is the Moses, had he decided to stay and just be the ruler of Egypt, would have been sin to him, because it would have been outside of what God had revealed to him. And that's us too. If we're walking in a place where we are doing things that are outside of what we know God wants us to do, that's sin to us. Now, the other principle here is true faith actually values the reproach of Christ. And so let's talk about this reproach of Christ. So how in the world did the writer of Hebrews come up with talking about Christ? When you go to Exodus, it doesn't say anything about Christ. Well, remember that the promise included a promised Redeemer. In fact, it said in Genesis chapter 49, verse 10, this is when when Israel or Jacob was giving his prophecies to and blessing his children at the end of his life. He said in chapter 49, verse 10, he said, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. And so here, they knew there was a Redeemer that was to come. They did. And Jesus said, when he was arguing in John chapter 8, verse 56, they were talking about Abraham, and Jesus said, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Abraham knew that a Messiah was coming. And Jesus said so right here. And so with this, we say, well, then Moses, he choosing to suffer the reproach of Christ is accurate. He wanted to be associated with the anointed one, the Messiah. And because the Messiah and the people are inseparable. And so Moses, his attitude was that he wanted to do what it took to be a part of fulfilling the promise that was given to Abraham. And so he had that attitude about taking on the reproach of Christ. Now, the reproach here of Christ, these were slaves. He was living as a king, and he wanted to be associated with slaves, and that is one form of reproach. But it's just the whole notion of the Messiah that was to come and the reproach that was associated with him. Now, it says that he said, verse 25, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Verse 26, considering the reproach of Christ, greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. And here you see something very strange. It's not that he's enduring ill treatment. It is he's valuing the reproach of Christ. Okay, and that is very hard to understand. Why would you value that? Because he knows that to value the reproach of Christ in the moment now, even though it requires suffering, is to value Christ in eternity. And so he actually valued the reproach of Christ versus endure it. And this is not different than what Paul said. He had this similar attitude, he said in several places, like in Philippians 3:7, but whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. And the suffering of Christ was something that he actually valued because it is the identification with Christ, because he knew that Christ, he could be identified with Christ in eternity. So true faith actually values the reproach of Christ in the present time in order to gain Christ for the eternity. All right, let's move on then. We go to verse 27. It says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. Okay, now I made a mistake on my last one then, so I need to have you fix something. So his faith action was to be identified with, and the last one was to actually be identified with the Hebrew people. And he did that through killing the Egyptian. Even though the act of killing the Egyptian was in the flesh, he was premeditated. Before he had done that, he had already decided that he was going to identify with his people. He was looking for an opportunity. That opportunity he chose was in the flesh, but he had sometime before he killed the Egyptian had decided to be identified with the people and to fulfill his role as the anointed deliverer. Now, then when we get to the one we're doing now in verse 27, that faith action then is when he fled to Midian. And that I've already talked about how that he then continued to try to accomplish. His choice there was to continue to try to accomplish deliverance under his own power or wait on God's timing. So the apparent consequence there would be exile, which he had to leave Egypt, and waiting, which he did. So he was 40 years old when he left Egypt, and God didn't talk to him until he was 80. So 40 more years of waiting. And that is so hard. But he never stopped believing that he was the anointed one to deliver. And so he had to go to exile and wait. Now, he had all this fantastic education in Egypt. I imagine when he was 40, he thought he was well-equipped to lead these people, and he actually really wasn't well-equipped yet. God had to take him out in the desert in Midian and have him to finish his real education spiritually. And sometimes we get ahead of God, and we think we're prepared to do something when we're not, and God's not in it. And sometimes it requires us to have to wait on God's timing. And so that's the faith principle. Sometimes faith requires us to wait on God's timing. Now, some of us are very good at waiting. We call it procrastination. And it's really not waiting in faith like Moses was. But Moses knew that if he pushed it, he was working in that power of flesh. If you've ever been part of a ministry where you realize you were pushing it and it was all you, it wears you out. I've done it. Anybody who's been in ministry does this sometime, where you realize, oh, God is not in what I'm doing right now. And it may be a good thing, but you just realize that you're making it happen on your own flesh, and it just wears you completely out. When you are doing it in God's faith, it may make you tired, but there's wind in your sails, because God gives you the strength, and things go, it just works. Sometimes it's complicated, because sometimes there's just resistance you need to persevere through, but sometimes there's just time, it's time to wait on God's timing. And so to continue on and push for Moses at age 40 to go ahead and be the deliverer right then and there would have failed. God was not there in it, but he fled to Midian and he waited on God. That's also in Moses, in the account in Acts chapter 7, was what Stephen was describing, how that he had to flee quickly because of what happened. And so it says that he was not afraid of the king's edict. He was not afraid of the king's wrath. And so if you just only read Exodus, you would think that he fled because he was afraid of the consequences. But I believe that he was actually, what Hebrews is teaching us, that he fled because he knew that he had to retreat in order to be able to accomplish his anointing later. God wasn't in it right at that point in time. Otherwise, it actually doesn't make sense. Okay. Now, let's move on then to the verse 28. It says, by faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. And so here in the revelation, there was absolutely clear, direct revelation to Moses about how to go about the Passover in great detail. This was the last of the plagues that was brought on the Egyptians right before they did the Exodus. And I suppose this is somewhat symbolic of all the different plagues that Moses had to go do and deliver to the Egyptians. But in this particular one, the Passover in particular foreshadowed Christ. Now, I believe that the author didn't bring out that foreshadowing because he was on the topic of faith. Here that particular plague was foreshadowing the perfect lamb that was to come, the death of the lamb, that they were to apply the blood so that the death angel would pass over, foreshadowed Jesus, where we apply the blood that we can be saved. Now, the choice was to obey God or not. There was direct revelation. It was really clear. It was really detailed. And he either had a chance to obey or not, and he chose to obey. And the people of Israel all followed what Moses said as well. The apparent, the faith action then was actually applying the blood, and that would allow the death angel not to touch those in the house. They protected them from the death angel, the firstborn, and the firstborn livestock. What was the apparent consequence? If this didn't work and God didn't do what he said he was going to do, you would have cost you a lot of valuable livestock. And just think how many lambs had to be. Now, these were slaves. You know, they didn't have lots of riches. And where did they get these lambs? You know, they had some flocks, but this had to cost them a lot of money. I mean, it cost them a lot of livestock. And so that was a cost they had to incur. And then if it didn't work, there would be even greater oppression by the Egyptians. And so, you know, the Egyptians would bear down on them even harder and be even more oppressive. Their near-term hope, again, was the deliverance of Israel from Egypt. And the long-term hope was the promise that they would be a nation and the Redeemer of the blessing and so forth. So this is, here you see the Moses operating in faith in God's eternal plan, even though you may not really understand every part of it. And so, but the faith principle here, at least one faith principle you can get out of this, that faith in God may cost you something. Here it costs them a lot of little lambs that they sacrificed, but it may cost you something to follow what God said for you to do. It may cost you some of your wealth. Now let's move on then to when they crossed the Red Sea in verse 29. It said, by faith they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. Now this is really, I think, an interesting one here. Here again, the revelation was extremely clear. God's direct instruction to Moses was very, very clear about crossing the Red Sea. And the faith action was that they actually crossed. They stepped out and crossed this, what seemed to be impossible, crossing a sea on dry ground. But they, in faith, did it. And it was not just a little group of people. This was a massive, massive bunch of people. Not only the people, but they had flocks and herds. And so it was, you know, I hope they had sheepdogs to help them, because that would just have been a massive, massive bunch of people and animals that were crossing the Red Sea. If you go back and read the account next to this, this was just not a normal, we're going to do what God said and everything's calm and easy. No, this was one of those where they were backed into a corner. They had the Red Sea blocking their exit. There was nowhere for them to go. They saw off in the distance the Egyptian army galloping toward them at full speed. You could probably just see a giant cloud of dust, you know, around the chariots and the horses on their way. And so what they were faced with was certain death. They either, you know, no matter what way they turned, you know, they're going to have to try to cross an ocean. And so they were going to die either by drowning or annihilation. If, you know, that's what man would see without faith, that apparent consequence. And so their near-term hope was they were to be delivered, except they were crying out, well, Moses, why did you bring us out here so that the Egyptians would be able to corner us and kill us? You know, they were already saying stuff like that. But God got in between the army, and he caused it so that the Egyptian army couldn't see them, and then told Moses to raise his staff, and the sea parted, and he said to go, and they did. So they had a choice then to either obey God or surrender to the Egyptian army. And so this is a faith in the presence of fear and high drama. And God then delivered his people unharmed in what may have seemed like to them at the very last minute in a very improbable, miraculous way. And so the principles that we look at here are that faith perseveres through high drama and fear when the outcome feels uncertain or even unlikely. So there are times when you hold on to what God has promised. Now, this is not talking about hoping something, you know, where you hope something happens. But when you have revelation that says this is going to happen, because God had told them this is what you should do, that they were in a spot where it didn't look like it was going to work out. They were going to get killed or taken back into captivity. They were cornered, and they didn't see a way out. And so as God sometimes does, he waits till the very last minute, you know. So when people have said, you know, when you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot in it and hold on. Because wait on God, because he often gets us right up to the end of our rope before he does what he says he's going to do. And that certainly was the case, and it was super, super high drama. Now, what was really cool about this, though, is that the Egyptians tried to copy what the Hebrew people did, and they tried to cross on dry ground as well. But copying a faith action does not work if you don't have faith. And so this, again, gets this idea that faith is not some sort of mysterious, funny thing. It is that the people of Israel were doing what God told them to do. The Egyptian people, when they followed, were not doing anything that God told them to do. They had no reason to believe that God was going to miraculously keep that sea open for them. And so God drowned them. You know, and so you can have people who do acts of faith that it is truly of faith, but you have an unbeliever could do the exact same thing, and it's not of faith at all. And it will have no good there. Does that make sense? Copying faith actions does not work for a person who has no faith. And so here the Egyptians had no basis in revelation for faith in safe passage through the sea, and so God drowned them. Now, we move on then to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30. It says, by faith the walls of Jericho fell after they had been encircled for 7 days. And so here again, we remember studying in Joshua not too long ago. We had direct instruction or revelation from God to Joshua about this battle strategy. And the action that they were to do was to march around Jericho, and then they were to sound the trumpets and so forth. You know the song. And then the near-term hope would be to have victory over the Jericho and all the Canaanite inhabitants so that they could have their land. And the long-term hope is the promise. And so here you see really the beginning of when one part of the promise is starting to be fulfilled, where Israel actually, these Hebrew people actually become a nation, which was part of the promise. And so a nation of people versus just a big people group. And a nation is one as a people that have a land. And so them by going in, and this is the beginning of them becoming a nation. And so you see really the long-term hope, one part of it starting to be fulfilled. And you know, it didn't fully be fulfilled here, but you can see the very beginning of it. And so the choice they had was to obey God, or they could produce their own battle strategy. Because doesn't marching around a city that has a giant wall seem ridiculous to a human point of view? Yes, it does. It would had to seem absolutely ridiculous, and boy, were they going to look foolish out there. And so what was the apparent consequence? Well, the people of the land were afraid of the Israelites. But if you march around seven times and nothing happens, the word's going to get out, and the whole people, all the Canaanite people will think, wow, you know, these people are nuts. And so the apparent consequence, just from man's point of view, is if it didn't work, that God would remove this action would remove the fear of God and of Israel from all the Canaanite adversaries in the land. And so their choice to obey God was in spite of their inability to see how this was going to work. And so the faith principle here is faith obeys God even when it does not make human sense. And so they followed what God said, and of course they had the other side, the people in Jericho, didn't even muster an army, and they were defeated. Now, did I fill in all the blanks there? Okay, all right. Then we go on to the last example, and this is the faith of Rahab, and when she hid the spies. It says in verse 31, by faith Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies. And so where was her revelation from? Well, that's back in Joshua chapter 2, verses 8 through 14. It says, now before they lay down, this is the spies, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. When we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, and that you also will deal kindly with my father's household, and give me a pledge of truth, and spare my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters with all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. And so, and back in chapter 11 and verse 6, it says, without faith, it is impossible to please him. For those who please God must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And here, clearly, Rahab believes that he is, and he's good, that he would save her family. In fact, in James chapter 2, verse 25, James was talking about how that our works bear out the faith that's within us. It says, in the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? And so her revelation that she had was through hearing the revelation that was given to Israel, and determined that Israel's God is real and he is good. So also watching the miraculous acts that happened to that nation. Her choice then was to either believe in God or trust in the wall, the walled city. And so her faith action was to welcome and hide the spies and help them escape. The apparent consequence, if it all went wrong and God didn't protect, is she faced punishment from her own people of being a traitor, and then she also faced death from an invading army if they didn't keep their word. Her near-term hope was to save herself and her family from physical death, but the long-term hope was in God. She wanted to be associated with the people of God. And so that is the promise. And so the faith principle here is, again, and this summarizes the whole section, faith affects our decisions, because the people of faith not only have saving faith, but they walk by faith in the decisions they make every day. Now, what time is it? Oh, okay, we've gone way over. Boy. Yep. I don't know why this happens. I just don't. I do want to cover some of these application questions here with you. Just, we're not going to be able to do a discussion, but when is it appropriate for our faith to influence or guide our decisions or choices? And so the answer to that is surprising. It is, we should always walk by faith. All right. Now, that doesn't mean that every single action is guided by some kind of divine providence, that, or not providence, excuse me, wrong word, by some kind of, there's not like a perfect will of what color socks you should have wore today, because you have you had freedom. You're still walking by faith, because the faith is, I'm not doing anything that God is against what God has told me to do when I picked out my socks this morning. You're still walking by faith, even though you had freedom to pick out whatever socks you wanted to. And so you weren't like in the divine plan to have a certain color of socks on, or maybe mismatching socks even. So that is that even sometimes we have complete freedom to use our common sense and to follow our own desires. You know, cause we could pick the color we like or the color that goes with our outfit, and we use our common sense, and there's nothing sinful there. And we are walking by faith because we are not going against anything that God's told us to do. But sometimes there are decisions to trust God even when we don't understand, often like witnessing to other people and that kind of thing. Who to get married, to whom to get married. So what part of these examples, decisions need to be faith-based? I talked about what socks to wear, what job to take would be one, but let's go down to the whom to marry. What does the Bible teach about whom you should marry if you're single? Let's say you're a man. What does God say about the woman that you should marry? She needs to be a believer. She needs to be a woman. And that's big. And there's one other one. And she needs not to be married to anybody else. All right, she needs to be single, not married to anybody else, needs to be a woman, needs to be a Christian, if you're a Christian. And then, what if those three criteria are met, do you have freedom to choose whichever one that meets those three criteria? And so what this gets at is, yes, you do. You have freedom to do that. Now, is God in his providence? Can he bring people in and out of your life that you didn't even know you were going to meet because that's who he wanted you to meet? Yes, that can happen. But when you get married to somebody and you, like 5 years later, you wake up and they have bad breath and they look awful and they're getting fat and you think, well, I must have really blown it. I didn't get the one that God actually had for me. You are totally wrong, because you had complete freedom, even if you were an idiot and married somebody and you lacked common sense and to really think through the decision. But if they were single, they were not married to somebody else, and they were a woman, then it's your decision to live with. And it's not like, though, you were out of the perfect will of God. You know, there isn't an exact one, because the Bible is silent. And so our faith, though, when we walk by faith, is you want to pick the one that God wants us to have, and we try to do that. But the pit that people fall into is when they later think, oh, I blew it. And that is wrong thinking, because really you got to stick with what did the Bible say. Whether to continue to follow Jesus and attending a true church when persecution erupts, of course, that's the whole point of the book of Hebrews. That's the main point of the lesson, is that no matter what, when persecution erupts, you don't leave Christ and you don't leave the church. You continue on all the way to the end. And so when to make faith known to unbelievers? Well, there are scriptures that teach us that don't throw your pearls before the swine. But there are also scriptures that say that we should be salt and light. And so, God guides us to those important appointments. But is there ever a time where you decide to hide your faith that you're not even a Christian? Never. You don't ever do that. You are always never ashamed of who Christ is. Now, so does that mean you're boldly shoving it down somebody's throat? No, it does not. But it doesn't mean that you're hiding that I am a believer in Christ. And I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. There's never a time when we ever hide the fact that we're a true believer. That is something that we would always do. Now, with that, I'm going to have to close. I hear people out there, a giant crowd of people, for this early on this time change morning that are waiting for us. So, Mark, I was wondering if you would close in prayer for us today.
You have been listening to a message from the Bible Church of Brownsburg. For more information, please visit our website at www.bcb.church or call 317-852-7475.